Deirdre, be a good girl. No. Oh, Deirdre, leave Inspector Pirbright alone. She's very fond of you, Pirbright.
Indeed, sir. I wonder how she behaves to those she isn't fond of.
Now, then, look, tell me all about it, about poor Mrs. Palgrove. I mean, it's tragic business, tragic. Come in.
Ah, excuse me, Chief Constable.
What can I do for you, Dr. Ferguson?
It's Inspector Pirbright I wanted, sir, if you'll permit me. I said I'd find you here, Pirbright. This woman from, Brompton Gardens.
Stop that adventure, you thingy brute! Out! Jimmy, out!
I say.
Mrs. Palgrove? Oh, yes?
I thought I'd better come and see you straight away. Something a bit odd. It'll be in the report, of course, but it might be as well for you to know now.
I see.
She did drown, no doubt at all about that. No evidence of organic disease, nothing significant. Anyway, time of death, hang on a minute. Yes, 11 last night, give or take a bit. Before midnight, certainly, but not more than an hour and a half before.
Between 10:30 and 12, then.
That's what I said. Yes. Now then, here's the queer thing.
Yes?
There's a definite bruising on both ankles. A distinct set of five bruises on each ankle, just at the bottom of the lower leg. And both sets match.
Bruising? Odd.
Yeah. Fingers?
I'd say there's not a doubt of it.
Fingers? But, oh, good Lord.
Any other marks, Doctor?
Well, I didn't intend to give you the full report just now.
Oh, naturally not. I do appreciate your having told me this much. It was just that I wondered if the body showed signs of injury.
Bruises are injuries, man. But to see what you're getting at, there are other marks, actually. Knuckles, elbows, abrasions, you know. If what we're both thinking is true, she must have flailed about a bit. Struggled, or so.
Struggled? Surely you aren't suggesting that she was... Oh, goodness me.
And there was a broad bruise just over the diaphragm.
Where she hit the wall when she was pushed over.
Pushed? Speculation is your job, not mine. I don't think I'd argue on that one, though. Not really. Still, see you at the inquest.
Thank you, Dr. Ferguson.
My pleasure.
But surely, Brompton Gardens, such a respectable area. It sounds an unpleasant business, Mr. Pirbright.
I'm afraid it does, sir.
It's very hard to credit. She's done some splendid work, you know, this woman. My wife knows her well. They were on several committees together. She'll be very upset about this.
She was popular, was she, Mrs. Palgrove?
I don't know about popular, exactly. All these good ladies squabble a bit at times, you know. I've heard she was inclined to rule the roost, rather. But good gracious, that's no reason why anyone should... And in Brompton Gardens... No, I can't understand it at all.
You remember that letter you received, sir? The unsigned one?
Letter?
Yes, sir. The one beginning, "My dear friend," and making some rather dramatic allegations.
Oh, that one would... We didn't take that seriously, though, did we?
You recall its terms, though?
Vaguely. Good Lord. Are you suggesting it might have some relevance? Whoever it was meant for, it did seem rather a wild letter.
I think it was meant for you, sir. And I think we shall find that Mrs. Palgrove wrote it.
Well, I suppose you'll be wanting to cast round to see if any of the neighbours noticed what was going on last night.
I was going to propose that Sergeant Love and Constables Harper and Broadley start on that straight away, sir. I shall go back to the house. The husband will be either there or within call, I imagine. Perhaps a search warrant, sir, just in case?
Oh, I say, well, I suppose we must... Brompton Gardens, though. Oh, dear.
I shouldn't imagine this has anything to do with Mrs. Palgrove's death, but there has been a rather curious feud lately between the organisers of some of the local charities. They've been busy sabotaging one another's efforts, or that's what it looks like. As you know, Mrs. Palgrove was a good deal involved in charity work. We shall have to satisfy ourselves that personal antagonism on somebody's part didn't sharpen into actual violence.
You give me the impression that you rather hope that to be the case.
Oh, not at all, sir. But the possibility must be explored.
Yeah, you must do as you think fit, Mr. Pirbright. But, Brompton Gardens, good Lord.
Mr. Palgrove about?
Left about an hour ago, sir. Said he wouldn't be long, but had to pop into his office. Should be on his way back by now.
Give him a ring and make sure that he is, will you, Sid?
Right, sir.
Constable Broadley.
Sir?
I want this well thing completely drained. You'd better go down personally to the fire service headquarters and see Budge. One of their small pumps should be adequate. How much water would you say there was in there, Broadley?
Ooh, well, now then, let's think.
About 20 cubic feet?
Ooh, nearer 21.
Good man. Oh, and you'd better mention the fish. Budge might have some nets or jars or something.
Right, sir. Right away, sir.
Oh, you'll need your helmet.
Oh, yes.
Pally's on his way, sir.
Good. By the way, how did you get into the house?
He left us the key.
Oh, very civil of him. Now, if she was tipped face first into the water and held by the ankles, her attacker must have been standing about here.
Inspector.
Hmm?
I think we've got something, sir. Look, I just typed this out on that typewriter in there, on that grey notepaper.
Mm-hmm. My dear friend, this is an urgent appeal. Urgent?
Well, I meant to be urgent, sir. Have you got one of the other letters with you for comparison?
Oh, indeed I have. Well done, Sid. Oh. Let's see what we've got.
Oh, look at that, then. Both got block Ds.
Yes. Look at the stem on the P, slightly deformed, and...
The ends?
Yeah. Every one slightly out of alignment.
She did write those letters, then.
I don't think there can be much doubt of it.
She must have guessed what was going to happen to her.
It looks rather like it.
The person whose loyal and faithful companion I have been, and to whom, even now, my life is dedicated, intends to have me done away with. That's a pretty obvious hint.
More than a hint, Sid. It's practically a straight identification.
Of Palgrove, of course.
Well, who else?
A lover?
You met Mrs. Palgrove.
Yes.
Could you imagine her with a lover?
Oh, see what you mean.
In any case, whose loyal and faithful companion I have been. No. I don't feel that's the sort of phrase one would use in relation to an affair. It's wife's language, I should have thought.
Now look at this. Perhaps to be held helpless underwater by a loved hand until I drown. Nasty bit of prophecy that turned out to be.
I wonder who she meant by they. You see, they think I do not understand. And here, I have heard the plan discussed.
Husband and a girlfriend?
Well, the inference is invited, certainly.
She could have been snooping on him.
It's more likely that he was careless over some telephone conversation. As you probably noticed, he has a very penetrating voice.
Are you going to tackle him about the letter?
Well, it'll have to be put to him sooner or later.
And the girlfriend?
Ah, now, that's a question that must be pursued straight away, and very diligently. Now, this totty you heard, he was, what was it you called it?
Oh, Rattlin.
Rattlin, yes. Who is she?
I don't know. But I could soon find out.
Soon as you can, Sid.
Oh, they've got such a lovely house, too. My young lady would love a place like this. The carpets, I mean, cocktail cabinet, nice curtains with drawstrings. And that television set. It's Jacobean, is that?
Is it really?
Oh, don't see many of those. Jacobean tellies.
I should be surprised if the Jacobeans ever saw one.
If I had a place like this, I don't want to spoil it by murdering somebody. Don't know what gets into people.
What I cannot for the life of me understand is what good she thought this letter was going to do her. She didn't even sign it. And she obviously changed her mind about enclosing a photograph.
Yes, but doesn't it say something about writing again?
True. Soon I shall send you details of how you can help. But why send the letter to a coroner, a chief constable, and a newspaper editor? Why those three? Why not just the chief constable? He seems the most appropriate in the circumstances.
You don't know that she didn't send letters to other people. Maybe they just threw them away. I should.
Oh, a fine confession from a detective sergeant.
Well, you must admit she sounds nutty.
No, I do.
Oh, there was this other letter in the desk drawer. I thought you might find interesting.
Well, let's see.
Pretty threatening, I thought.
Yes. Now, here's our old friend again. Miss Tea Time seems to crop up everywhere.
Funny old girl.
Don't make her sound decrepit, Sid. She's 52, actually, I believe.
Well?
Well, I'm 51, so watch it. In any case, she's very well preserved.
Like you, Gov... Inspector. What's she up to now, though, I wonder?
sabotaging a dog shelter, if we are to believe Mrs. Palgrove. This is one of those if-the-cap-fits letters.
Mrs. Palgrove seems to be pretty hot on letter writing. Or she was, rather.
How long has Miss Teatime been concerned with good work, Sid?
No idea. All I heard was that she'd taken some sort of secretarial job in St. Anne's Gate, at what we now know to be this Flaxburn Eastern Counties Charities Alliance. They reckon she has private means.
It's a very sharp letter. Listen, it may be of interest to you to know that certain information has reached me privately concerning the disposal of funds raised not 100 miles from here in the name of so-called charity. I am reluctant to pass this information on to the authorities, but I shall not hesitate to do so if the need arises.
So you think Miss Teatime might have done in Mrs. Palgrove to save herself from being nicked for embezzlement? Well, could be. She's a fit old bird, as well as being well-preserved.
Oh, come, Sid, you mustn't jump too far ahead. Anyway, this was only written yesterday. Wouldn't have reached the lady until this morning. Always assuming that it was posted at all.
She's strong for Litland, though. Miss Teatime, I mean. She was more than a match for that chap over at Benston who tried to drown her in a cesspit. Remember?
How could I forget? She's a bit of a judo expert, too, if I recall. Black belt, was it? I think I really must have a chat with Miss Lucy Teatime.
Will you be Mother Lucy, or shall I?
I shall, of course. And I think we might treat ourselves to some of those delicious cakes. Well, my dear Mortimer, this is a delightful surprise. I had expected that you would be fleeting back to the metropolis by now.
Another matter has detained me, Lucy. I find it necessary, nay, desirable, to stay here at least for tonight.
I know that gleam in your eye, Mortimer. It's the gleam of the professional correspondent in full cry.
I assure you, Lucy, this is pure pleasure, and in no way tainted by business. But though I no longer follow the profession to which you refer, sure it's only natural that I should want to keep my hand in.
Hardly the way I would have put it, but I'm delighted that you're staying, nevertheless. So why don't you stay longer, Mortimer? You've not yet lost your London pallor. Surely you could indulge yourself in a week or so by the sea.
Well, don't want to upset my client.
Surely he's no longer your client.
True, but in this business, new clients come from the recommendations of satisfied customers.
He was satisfied, surely.
I said he was. But he also seemed most anxious for me to leave Flaxborough at once. It seemed to be important to him, and I should.
Why on earth should he want you to leave?
Don't know. But I could tell from the note of urgency in his voice. He seemed quite desperate about it.
I'm sure you'll appreciate what a difference has been made by this report of the doctor's, Mr. Palgrove.
I understand, yes.
I've been perfectly frank about it because I want to know if you can suggest an explanation of the bruises on your wife's legs. An explanation, that is, other than the sinister but obvious one.
Well, hundreds of things can cause bruising.
Symmetrical bruising? 5 each side, and spaced so?
Yes, but you don't know. I mean, nobody can say for certain, just looking at marks.
I'm sorry, sir, but I think you can take it from me that these particular marks can be interpreted in only one way.
Does he have to write all this down?
I'm afraid the sergeant does, sir.
Cigarette? It's got a bit crumpled in the packet, I'm afraid. I can't think where
No, thank you. I should like you to tell me now everything you did last night. From tea time, say, until you arrived at your office this morning. Take your time, sir. I prefer you to be fairly precise.
Well, this is going to sound a bit unlikely. What I mean to say is, if it's alibis you're thinking about, I suppose I just haven't got one.
You mustn't worry about what you suppose I'm wanting you to say, Mr. Palgrove, so long as it's true. What I'm able to make of it is my problem.
Yes, well, I had made arrangements to go to Leicester, actually, seeing about some machinery.
Yes, sir?
I was hoping to stay over with an old friend of mine, Wilcox, he's called, on the board of Hardy Livingstone. Anyway, I left here around 6.
By car?
In the a.m., yes.
I thought we were talking about the evening, sir.
Oh, that's right. Oh, look, I can get you. A.M., Aston Martin.
Oh, I see.
As I was saying, I left here around 6. I'd had a spot to eat with my wife, not much. Not a tea man, and told her where I was going, of course, and that I'd be back sometime in the morning.
Would you say it was usual or unusual for you to spend the night away from home?
I don't know. Unusual, I suppose, really. But I have to occasionally. Henny didn't mind. She's lots of interest of her own. Anyway, to cut a long story short, there was I, halfway to Leicester, when I thought I heard one of the Tappets knocking. Well, I was a bit put out because the bus had only been in for a service yesterday, and Henderson's are generally pretty efficient. So what I did was to pull into the next lay-by and have a proper listen under the lid. Couldn't trace a damn thing wrong. I went on a few more miles, damn me if it didn't start again. Same old pantomime, pull in, listen, fiddle around, nothing. 3 times I did that. In the end, I just tried to forget about it and bashed on. But naturally, I'd lost a lot of time. I didn't get to Leicester until... Oh, it must have been 9 at least. I was a bit tired, you know, fed up. And there didn't seem much point in chasing up the fellow I'd come to see. Anyway...
Excuse me, sir, but wouldn't 8 or even 7 o'clock in the evening be a rather unconventional time to discuss business in any case?
Well, I suppose you could say that, yes, but I just don't happen to be conventional. It doesn't pay, Inspector, not these days.
All right, sir. Go on.
Well, to cut a long story short, I drove round to Tony Wilcox's place and saw straight away that I'd boobed. Not a light in the place. I thought, should I wait? Then, no, I thought they might not be back for hours. And it would hardly be on for me to be waiting on the doorstep, the uninvited guest. Not at that time of night. So I just turned round and started back.
To Flatsborough?
Sure. Now then, I don't know whether you know a pub called The Feathers, just the other side of Melton Mowbray.
Come in.
Oh. Sorry to interrupt.
Yes,
Inspector.
Broadly, what is it?
I drained it like you asked, and at the bottom, just found this. Oh. Thought I'd better...
Thank you.
Sir.
Yes. Do go on, Mr. Palgrove.
Yes. This pub... it wasn't The Feathers, actually. I must have been mixing it up with another one. I don't know its name, but it's somewhere yon side of Melton. The point is that I stopped there for a drink. It was nice and comfortable, so I had another one. I was tired, and of course I'd had nothing to eat. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I'd drunk 4, maybe 5 whiskies by the time I left. And as soon as I started to drive again, I knew I was going to feel woozy, so I did the sensible thing and pulled off the road there and then. I went bang off to sleep. Didn't wake up until 9 o'clock this morning.
9 o'clock. Have you got that, Sid?
Yes, sir.
Well, sounds silly, but there you are.
When you left your wife yesterday evening, she was quite normal, was she? In good health, I mean? Not upset in any way?
Oh, yes, perfectly.
Was she expecting a visitor, do you know?
I don't think so. No one in particular. Well, I told you there were various people did call. People mixed up with this social work of hers.
It would be helpful if you could tell us who these people were, sir.
Well, I'll try. But I didn't take all that interest, actually. Some of them I know. Mrs. Arnold from down the road, she's one of the dog ones. Then this woman from that Red Cross place, Miss Ironside. Oh, and a schoolteacher called, No, wait a minute, he's not. He's something to do with insurance, I think. Can't remember his name. Then the vicar, of course, Mr. Haynes. I've seen a couple of others occasionally, but I've no idea who they are.
No one else you can think of, sir?
No. I mean, they weren't people I had anything to do with myself. Blast. Don't know why they make cigarette packets so flimsy. These are all bent, and I can't think of
the right... Is this cigarette case what you're looking for, sir?
Oh, hello. Where did that turn up?
Here you are.
Well, thanks anyway. It's only plated, actually. 18 quid, all the same. Will you have one now, Inspector? What the hell?
The water hasn't done them much good, has it?
I don't get it.
That is your case, sir.
Well, of course it is.
The officers found it a short while ago. At the bottom of your garden well, Mr. Palgrove. Where your wife was drowned.
Hey, now hold on a minute.
Yes, sir?
Now, look, I can see what you're bloody well getting at, but you're quite wrong. Well, how the hell could I have anything to do with what happened to Henny when I wasn't anywhere near the place? I know nothing about it at all. Absolutely nothing.
Can you suggest how that case came to be in the waters?
Well, of course I can't.
Beneath the body of your wife?
No.
When was it last in your possession?
Yesterday, I should think. Yes, I had it at tea time. I must have left it around in this room somewhere.
Did your wife smoke?
Oh, good Lord, no.
So it's not likely that she had the case with her when she went out to the well?
Well, you don't know that. She could easily have picked it up. I mean, she was always tidying things up. For that matter, she could have chucked it into the water herself. I wouldn't put it past her.
That does rather sound as if you and Mrs. Palgrove didn't always get on very well. I hadn't realized. I'm sorry.
Oh, good heavens. All married couples disagree occasionally.
True, sir, but they don't all throw away valuable cigarette cases to spite one another.
Now, look, Inspector, if you think you can goad me into...
Perish the thought, Mr. Palgrove.
Yes. Well, don't be so damn provocative. I'm sorry. This has been one hell of a shock. I suppose I'm a bit knocked up. You know, the fact is that Henny and I got along as well as most. Not around each other's necks all the time, but so what? I certainly wouldn't have done her any harm.
Mr. Palgrove, was your wife a wildly imaginative woman?
Well, I wouldn't have said so. She was a bit gone on animals. But look, we went into all of that when you were here before.
That's right, we did. But if I may say so, you're not in quite the same mood as you were then. That's perfectly natural. First reaction to shock can often take a form that people might mistake for flippancy.
Did you think I was being flippant?
No, sir. I think brittle would be a better word. My impression is that you're now more inclined to consider the seriousness of your own position. For instance... You said at our first interview that your wife got so worked up about some things that she was in danger of going over the top, as you put it. You spoke of her abnormality of attitude, her excitability, her passion for letter writing. But now, you're taking some pains to present Mrs. Palgrove as a fairly ordinary housewife with ordinary enthusiasm and lapses of temper. Is this because you've realized that your earlier picture was certain to be contradicted by other people?
Well, I've not thought about what other people might say. Why should I? I haven't done anything.
If I may, sir.
What?
The case. I shan't deprive you of it longer than necessary. The sergeant will give you a receipt. Now, I'd like you to look at this letter, if you will, sir. Then perhaps we can talk about it. Sid?
Who?
I'd like you to see how Harper and Broadley are getting on with the neighbours. Give them a hand, if necessary.
Righto.
Well, sir.
What am I supposed to make of this?
We believe that it was written by your wife.
Why should you? It's not even signed.
Whose typewriter is that on the desk?
My wife's.
Well, it was certainly typed on that machine. It seems reasonable to assume that it was she who typed it.
All right. You tell me what it means. It's just a string of rubbish, as far as I'm concerned. Just rubbish.
Oh, come, sir. The implication is plain enough. I'm not saying that I believe it or disbelieve it, but you mustn't pretend that you can't understand what she's getting at.
Oh, it's bloody rubbish, man. I'm not going to waste my time discussing it.
I can see you're upset just now, sir. I'll leave you for the time being. I'd prefer it if you didn't leave the house, though.
Am I under arrest?
Good Lord, no. It's just that I shall want to talk to you again later, when you've had time to collect your thoughts.
Here's your brandy.
Ah.
Morty.
Thank you, my dear.
Helen.
Helen.
You haven't forgotten it's my night off tonight, Morty.
Why else have I remained in Flaxborough? My clients in London are badgering me, of course, but I tell them plainly they must manage without me.
Oh, Morty.
Do I take it, Helen, that you are off for the whole night?
Why, Morty, I don't know what you're suggesting.
You know precisely what I am suggesting, madame. We are surely at the stage of arranging the details. I notice there's a small ristorante in the market square.
Pietro's?
Precisely.
Ooh, ever so select and expensive.
Hang the expense. A meal by candlelight, a deux, and then...
And then?
We retire for
A nightcap.
We could always have a nightcap at... Well, I've got a little flat overlooking the square.
What could be more convenient? I will collect you at 8 for dinner at 8:30.
Oh, Morty.
Until then, your very good health. I must leave you. Some unfinished business, you know.
Well, tra then.
Au revoir.
Oh, yeah. Au revoir.
Mr. Palgrove?
Huh?
I wonder if you'd mind coming out here a minute, sir.
What is it now?
Just looking at your car, sir. Gee, a fine beast.
Proper motor is that. None of your mass-produced rubbish. Set me back an arm and a leg, did that. You've no right to be rooting about inside it, though.
I do have a search warrant, sir.
Oh. Well, what did you want?
This is your service record chart. According to the garage, your registered mileage yesterday afternoon was 7,225. Would you care to check that, sir? I make it 21 miles since the car was serviced yesterday. And Leicester is, what, 80 miles from here? A return trip of 160?
Well, that is...
Don't you think, sir, that it might be as well if you called your solicitor before we do any more talking?
Charity Ends at Home by Colin Watson is dramatised by Christopher Dennis. John Rowe played Inspector Pervright, Paul Downing, Sergeant Love, Robin Polly, Mr. Palgrove, and Graham Roberts, the Chief Constable. Geoffrey Banks was Mortimer Hive, Anne Rye, Lucy Teatime, Russell Dixon, Mr. Ferguson, and Catherine Hunt, Helen. Charity Ends at Home was directed in Manchester by Tony Cliff.